Have you ever been, deep in something important on your computer? Maybe finishing a report, or you're right there, about to beat a level in a game, and then bang, crash.
Oh, yeah. The dreaded freeze.
Exactly. The app just dies, the website glitches out, your game locks up, all that progress gone. It's so frustrating, isn't it?
It really is. We just expect things to work these days,
Yeah,
seamlessly.
we totally do. But what happens when they don't? And maybe more importantly, who are these like unsung heroes working behind the scenes, making sure it usually does work, even when we throw all sorts of weird stuff at it?
There's a whole process there.
Okay, so let's unpack that then. Today, we're doing a deep dive into software testing. We're going to pull back the curtain a bit on what it really means for testing to be systematic and comprehensive.
Two really key words.
Absolutely, Q. We need to understand how they make sure the software you use every day actually does what it's supposed to do, reliably, robustly. And we'll dig into the different kinds of data they use to push programs to their limits, try and find those sneaky bugs.
Yeah, and what's fascinating, maybe a bit humbling, is just how complex modern software is. I mean,
Yeah.
think about millions of lines of code all interacting, guaranteeing absolute perfection. It's impossible.
Impossible, really.
Pretty much. So the fundamental principle we work with, and this is crucial, is that testing can only show you that errors are present. It can never prove that errors are absent.
Huh, that's a big distinction.
It's profound, yeah. Our goal isn't bug-free perfection because that's not achievable. It's about drastically cutting down the number of errors through really smart, rigorous testing.
Wow, okay, testing only shows what's broken, never proves it's perfect. That feels counterintuitive somehow. So, if perfection's off the table, why is this incredibly detailed, painstaking testing process still, like the foundation for reliable software? Why bother?
Well, because perfection is unattainable. That's precisely why testing is so vital.
Yeah.
It's our best weapon against risk, you know? In the whole software development lifecycle, testing isn't some afterthought. It's a planned, defined stage. We're rigorously checking. Does the program give us the expected outputs for given inputs? And critically, is this based on the test plan we created way back in the design stage?
Ah, so it can expect the initial design.
Exactly. And this structured approach, it's not just about finding bug, it's smart economics, really. Finding a problem early on, say, when you're just figuring out the requirements, that's massively cheaper to fix than finding that same bug later.
How much cheaper are we talking?
We're talking factors of 50 to 200 times cheaper, seriously.
Wow.
Imagine catching a major flaw before it even gets near a user. Think of the time, the money, the reputation saved.
50 to 200 times. That puts it in a totally different perspective. It's efficiency, preventing huge headaches later.
Okay, so we need smart, effective testing. And those two words keep popping up: systematic and comprehensive. Can you break those down for us? What do they actually mean in practice?
Sure. Let's start with systematic testing. Simply put, it means testing in a logical order. Logical order.
Okay, yeah, it's about having a structured method, a planned approach. You're not just randomly poking at the software hoping to find something. You follow a defined sequence, making sure you intentionally cover all the important areas. Think of it like a surgeon. They follow precise steps, right? Not just random cuts.
Got it. A methodical checklist almost.
Exactly. Then there's comprehensive testing. This suggests testing every possible scenario. Now, realistically, testing every single value, that's usually impossible. Could be infinite inputs.
Right.
But the goal of comprehensive testing is making sure any boundaries in the program have been fully probed. And you do this using different kinds of data: normal, extreme, and exceptional, which we'll get into. The key idea is, if your testing is truly systematic, following that logical plan, it's highly likely it will also be comprehensive. It helps you cover those critical edge cases.
Okay, so systematic leads to comprehensive. They work together.
They really reinforce each other,
Yeah.
yeah.
That surgeon analogy, or like mapping out a road trip before you start driving, that makes systematic really clear. So you've got this blueprint, this is a systematic approach. What are the actual ingredients, the data types you use? You mentioned normal, extreme, and exceptional. Let's start with the basics, normal data.
Right, normal data, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's the data that the program's expected to deal with in everyday use, your typical inputs.
Like what?
So if your program accepts numbers between, say, 1 and 100, normal data would be inputs like 46 or 62 or maybe 80, stuff right in the middle of the expected range.
And why use that? Just to see if it works at all.
Pretty much. You use normal data to verify the program works correctly under the most common typical conditions. It's your baseline check. Does it do the main job it's supposed to do?
Okay, normal data covers the everyday stuff, but where do things get, you know, dicey? Where are the problems likely hiding? Is that where extreme data fits in?
That's exactly it. Extreme data represents the values at the very boundaries of the range the program should accept.
The edges.
The absolute edges. So back to our 1 to 100 example, extreme data would be the number 1 itself and the number 100.
And why focus so much on just those two numbers?
Because boundaries are notorious hiding places for bugs. A program might work perfectly fine for 46, but then stumble or give a wrong result when it hits the absolute minimum allowed or the absolute maximum. That's where you find off-by-one errors or slightly wrong logic. Testing the edges is non-negotiable if you want robust software.
Makes sense. Like checking the very ends of a bridge, make sure they're solid.
Okay, so normal, then extreme.
Yeah.
Then you mentioned exceptional data. That sounds like the real curveballs, the stuff users might accidentally type in.
You've nailed it. Exceptional data is data that lie beyond the extremes of normal operation. This is where you intentionally feed it things that shouldn't work, things entered by mistake, or maybe even maliciously.
Like typing text into a number field.
Exactly. So if it expects whole numbers from 1 to 100, you test it with text like apple, or decimals like 15.6, or even symbols like a percentage sign, things it should reject.
Okay. What else counts as exception? Crucially, it also includes values just outside the valid boundaries. For 1 to 100, you'd test 0 and 101, maybe even negative numbers like number to 5.
Right, things that are the right type of data numbers, but the wrong value.
Precisely, and the whole point here is testing for robustness. Does the program handle this invalid input gracefully? Does it give a clear error message? Or does it just crash and burn?
So it shouldn't just fall over when someone types something weird.
Exactly. Exceptional data testing builds that invisible shield. It protects the user experience from accidents, prevents frustration, maybe even data loss. It makes the software resilient.
Okay, this framework, normal, extreme, exceptional, sounds solid, but theory is one thing. How does this actually look in practice? How do developers bring all this together? You mentioned the test plan. What does a good one actually contain?
Right, the test plan. It's the blueprint, the detailed guide for verification. A good one needs to be structured, documented really well. It must include the specific test data you're going to use for each test, and crucially, the expected results.
Expected results, so you know beforehand what should happen.
Absolutely. You'll typically see columns in the plan. Type of testing, normal, extreme, exceptional. The actual input data, the expected result, then space for the actual result you observed during the test. And finally, did it pass or fail?
And why document all that so meticulously?
It's invaluable. It's proof of what's been tested, what hasn't. It helps track down bugs. And importantly, it stops you from wasted repeating work. You have a clear, repeatable process.
Okay, let's make this concrete. Our source material has a great example. A test plan for a module called Get Valid a Mark. Its job is to check if an assignment mark is a whole number between 0 and 50. Can you walk us through how they applied these data types there?
Yes, absolutely. This Get Valid a Mark example is perfect. Remember the rules. Integer, 0 to 50 inclusive.
Okay.
So first up in the plan, normal data. They use inputs like 20 and 35. For both, the expected result is straightforward. Accept and move on to next module. This just checks, does it handle typical scores? Basic stuff.
Right, the easy ones.
Then we hit the extreme data. This is where it gets more interesting, probing those boundaries. The plan is very thorough. They test 0, that's the lower boundary itself, expected. Accept. They test 50, the upper boundary, expected. Accept.
Makes sense. Got to check the exact limits.
But they don't stop there. They test around the boundaries too. Input medical 1, that's 1 below lower, expected. Reject and ask for new value. Input 1, 1 above lower, expected. Accept. Input 49, 1 below upper, expected. Accept. Input 51, 1 above upper, expected. Reject and ask for new value.
Wow, that's really precise. Checking right next to the line.
It has to be. That's where logic errors often hide. Did they use less than when they meant less than or equal to?
Yeah.
This catches that.
Okay, what else was extreme?
There's another crucial one. Ooh. 25.5. The comment notes is test accepting only integers. Even though 25.5 is numerically in the range, it's not a whole number. Expected. Reject and ask for new value. Checks data type validation.
Ah, very clever. Didn't think of that one.
It's an easy one to miss. Finally, the exceptional data. This pushes it even further. Input Nennecken 10, way below the lower boundary. Expected. Reject. Input 55, way above the upper boundary. Expected. Reject.
Just making sure it doesn't freak out with totally out of range numbers.
Exactly. Okay. And while it's not explicitly shown in this specific table snippet, a really complete plan would also test non-numeric input here, like typing fail or just hitting enter with no input. Those should also be rejected gracefully.
So the plan aims to cover every angle for that one small module.
Precisely. It systematically covers all the boundaries, common errors, unexpected inputs. That's comprehensive testing for just this one part.
That is incredibly thorough. It really shows the difference between just hoping it works and proving it handles things systematically.
Yeah.
And this isn't just for validating one mark, right? This applies everywhere.
Everywhere. This same meticulous approach gets applied to all the different pieces of a program. Validating an exam mark, get valid e-mark, calculating percentages, deciding grades. Each part gets this level of scrutiny.
Okay, so you test all the individual pieces. What then?
Well, connecting it to the bigger picture, you then need what's called final testing or integrative testing.
Integrative?
Yeah. It's about testing that all modules pass parameters correctly and interact as expected. Does the get valid OMARC module hand off the correct validated mark to the calculate percentage module? Do they talk to each other properly?
Ah, so testing the connections between the parts.
Exactly. Does the whole system work together smoothly? That's the ultimate systematic and comprehensive test. Ensuring the entire thing works as one cohesive unit, not just a bunch of separate parts that happen to function on their own.
Right. Building the whole robust system. Okay. But like you said right at the start, perfection is impossible. Bugs will slip through sometimes, or maybe they show up during this testing. When an error does pop up, what happens next? How do developers actually find and fix the problem?
Yeah, that's where debugging techniques are essential. It's all part of the development cycle. A classic technique is the dry run.
Dry run.
It's basically a manual run through of the code, either the pseudocode or the actual source code. The programmer pretends to be the computer, step by step, taking notes of the values of variables as they change.
Like tracing it on paper.
Exactly. Low tech, but surprisingly effective for spotting logic flaws.
Okay, what if that's not enough?
And you might move to trace tables.
Yeah.
They're a bit more formal. You record what each line of code is doing, in turn, tracking variable values systematically in a table. It gives you a much more granular view, really helps narrow down where things go wrong if the dry run was too broad.
Gotcha, more structured tracing.
And then with modern tools, we have things like breakpoints. You can set a breakpoint in your code, which tells the program to stop execution right at that specific line.
Like hitting pause.
Precisely. When it pauses, you can examine the values of variables, see the program state, and then step through the code line by line from that point. It's incredibly powerful for seeing exactly what's happening inside.
That sounds useful.
Very. And related to that are watch points. These are even more specific. Execution stops only when a particular variable changes its value, or some specific event happens. This lets you track the flow of data or see exactly when and how a value gets corrupted, for instance.
So lots of tools to zoom in on the problem.
Yeah, and what's key is that finding a bug often means you have to go back up the waterfall, as they say, back to earlier stages. Maybe you need to refine the design, rewrite some code, then retest. It's this continuous cycle. Test, find, fix, refine, retest. That's how software gets more reliable over time.
So, wow. This deep dive really shows that building reliable software is so much more than just writing the initial code. It's this incredibly rigorous, thoughtful process, systematic, comprehensive testing, really trying to anticipate every way something could break.
Yeah, from the totally normal inputs to the really weird, exceptional ones, it's like you're intentionally trying to break it, but in a controlled way to make it stronger.
That makes sense. Understanding this really does show you that invisible shield protecting our digital lives. It highlights the incredible effort, the sheer meticulousness that goes into making the tech we rely on actually work smoothly and robustly.
It really does. It's what builds that trust, that confidence when you use a piece of software.
So next time you're using an app or a website and it just works flawlessly, doing exactly what you expect, maybe take just a second. Appreciate that hidden process. Think about all those tests, the normal ones, the extreme ones, the exceptional ones that went into making it reliable for you. What stands out to you about the difference that this kind of thorough testing makes in our digital world today?